Welcome to our show today. Today's show is the second in a three-part series, maybe more, but a three-part series on real estate consulting. The first show that we did in this series was back in September, and it was about the first steps of adding consulting to your real estate practice. This second show, originally was supposed to be a continuation of that first one with some practical ways to actually implement some consulting options, but I changed my mind after the first show as to what I wanted to talk about, and that's how we came up with the subject that isn't about the first step. Those of you here today who attended the first show that I did back in September, you might remember how tired I was, and at times I felt like I was completely incoherent. I do appreciate all of your assurances that I was not, but even my assistant commented that the editing of the recording of the show was a bit more challenging than usual. I'd been up all night the night before doing some doggy rescue stuff, and while that certainly was rewarding in itself, it didn't make for my best appearance ever at a Tell Whistle Tell a seminar. The reason that I'm reminding you how ineffective I was during that show is because that's part of what inspired the change in theme for this one. During that show, y'all asked me some great questions, and frankly, I had trouble answering them. Not because I didn't know the answers or not because I didn't have good answers, but my brain just wasn't functioning as well as I liked it to. So today's show will answer those questions, hopefully more coherently and effectively than I was able to do. And to ensure that that happens, I have invited three guests to join me today and to help me out, even if I do stumble again. So what were the questions that you all asked me that we're going to answer today? Well, basically, questions along the lines of, sounds interesting, but. The questions, the concerns, the objections to the underlying concepts of real estate consulting as we define it here. For those of you who like the idea of it in theory but aren't quite convinced that it can really work. I am joined in the studio today by three people. First is Ray Roman, who is the broker owner of Ray Roman Realty in Kingfisher, Oklahoma, which serves central Oklahoma, including Oklahoma City. I also have Erica Ramos, who is the broker owner of Ramos Realty Group in, and Erica, you're going to have to, I don't know how to pronounce it. Tell me where you are.
Schuylkill County.
Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania, right?
Yep, Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania. Pottsville,
okay.
Home of Yingling Beer.
Okay, cool. And then we have Molly, who, if any of you have had anything to do with real estate consulting, you know who Molly Wasserman is. She is the founder of the Accredited Consultant and Real Estate Program and was a practicing real estate consultant, obviously, and a successful one. So she will be here to share her thoughts as well. Now, Erica and Ray are both actively practicing consulting. So what they share with you today, Molly and I are not, but what Ray and Erica will share with you today are, you know, things that are actually working for them today and maybe a little more relevant than any opinions Molly and I might have on the matter. So hello to all of you. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it. This seems as good a time as any to do just a quick review of real estate consulting and by what we mean by actively practicing consulting, which, as I said, Erica and Ray are currently doing. Now, according to the Accredited Consultant in Real Estate course, which is what Molly founded and I'm now the commander-in-chief of, according to the designation, we define consulting as, one, to take a consultative approach as opposed to a sales approach when working with clients, and two, to offer choices in the services provided and how those services can be paid for. Now, as we discussed in the first show, I expect that most of you on this call already look at your role as more consultative than sales, so we aren't going to spend much, if any, time there today. What we're going to focus on is the second part of the definition, offering choices in the services provided and how those services can be paid for. So, again, as I did in the first show, allow me to quote directly from the ACRE website to elaborate on the second part. A real estate consultant is a real estate practitioner who believes in offering real estate consumers transparent choices when it comes to the services they receive and how they pay for those services. A real estate consultant recognizes that the traditional real estate compensation structure of being paid a contingent fee based on the sales price of the product they sell, and I put that in quotes, sell, does not always serve the best interests of the buyer or seller, nor for that matter, the best interests of the real estate practitioner. A real estate consultant also realizes that not all real estate consumers need or want to pay for the full package of services that our industry typically offers, and therefore offers alternative products and services to better fit the needs of each individual client. And finally, because a real estate consultant has the desire and the ability to customize both his or her offerings and fees, he or she enjoys far more opportunities to serve the real estate needs of the consumer in his or her community. Okay, that's a mouthful. Okay, so if you follow my blog at Active Ring, I started up a little series a while back called Real Estate Consulting. Sounds interesting, but it will never catch on. And in that series, I started a discussion of 7 common objections to consulting from the compensation and services perspective, not the consultative versus sales part. Most of the people who follow my blog or follow me at all truly get that they should work with their clients consultatively. Where the trouble begins is offering non-traditional services and compensation choices. Okay, so we're going to go ahead here in just a few minutes and go ahead and dive in and start working on those objections. What we're going to do is go through the 7 common concerns or objections, roughly in the order that they're presented to me. I mean, not in the order, but in the frequency that I get that objection. So if we don't hit all of them, we will have hopefully hit the ones that are of most concern to you as well. So here are the 7 common objections. 1, my broker will never go for it. 2, it will never work in my market. 3, why would someone pay me to do what everyone else does for free? 4, why would I want to make less money? 5, charging upfront fees is illegal in my state. 6, prices are too low in my market to make charging fees viable. And 7, I like working on commission. Okay. So, you guys ready?
We are.
We are.
Okay, sure. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. The first objection, and this is probably the one we hear the most, is my broker will never go for it. Now, this is a question that people new to consulting always ask is, now, if I'm getting paid, say, an upfront fee or a retainer fee or by the hour, does the client make out their payment check or whatever to me or to my broker? Well, they're going to make it out to your broker because any compensation in most areas anyway, if not all, must go through your broker. So, obviously, your broker needs to be on board with this. They need to agree with what you're doing and hopefully even bless it. And getting to that point can be challenging, honestly. I'm not going to lie to you. It can be challenging. Not all brokers, in fact, many brokers will not be in the mood to consider this newfangled idea of real estate consulting, a lot of which because they have the same objections we're going to cover today. So if we have time, we'll talk a little bit about how to overcome that objection, although we talked about that a lot in the first show, and I don't want to just rehash that. So let me go ahead and just throw this at Erica and say, okay, my broker will never go for it. Erica, what are some of your thoughts on that?
Okay, easy answer is get your own broker's license and start your own firm, which is what I did because I was struggling with doing it in my prior company, and the broker was just not open to anything that was not normal in his viewpoint. There were other agents in the office, and he felt that if we went anything different, it would become chaos. So I did get my own broker's license and opened my own place. But I think many brokers simply don't understand where you're coming from and that it's not some crazy cowboy kind of way of doing business, that it is legitimate, that you have your own rules that you set. And if you sit down and explain to him or her what you're trying to accomplish, you're not trying to get cheaper rates into the office. You're not trying to break the rules. You're just trying to set a whole new way of doing business.
Now, Erica, let's say that you hadn't heard of this yet, or it hadn't occurred to you to do this, and an agent came in to you, and Ray, think about this as well. An agent came in to you and said, I want to do this consulting thing. What would be persuasive to you?
Probably just being able to sit down with them and having someone tell me, look, I know we're not doing this right now, but it could be an alternate stream of income or a different way of looking at the coin. I'm always open to alternate streams of income or ways of doing things. So to me, I want to know if they had a plan and that it wasn't just some crazy off-the-cuff idea, but if it was well thought out and presented in a way that this is what I think we should do and this is why, I'd be willing to listen to them.
That's a great point. And we talked about that in the first show, is if you just walk in and say, well, I read this blog about real estate consulting, or I just went to this teleseminar about it and it sounds really interesting, can we do it? And that's all you have, you're probably going to get the no, because the broker doesn't have time to sit down and figure it all out. So, Ray, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree a lot with Erica. I mean, if you don't do it, it's missed revenue. It's a revenue you could have gotten that you will not get. And I think that's the angle that the agent should try with the broker. But in addition to that, I think what's even more important is real estate is a very competitive market, and you have to do certain – you want to do things that make you stand out,
mm-hmm.
make you better and different. Not just different, because different – anybody could be different. You have to provide – be better and provide more value. And if you approach it from that angle, that you're providing clients an alternative mm-hmm. to the traditional real estate commission, and that you're also providing value
mm-hmm.
and setting yourself apart from the competition, me as a broker, I'd be very interested.
I love how Erica put that. I mean, you both just had two very interesting phrases. Erica, the alternative stream of income, as opposed to I want to replace my business model with this. No, I want to supplement it with alternative streams of income. I love that. And then you said something along those lines, too, of defining your value or differentiating yourself, which agents all the time are saying, how do I differentiate myself from the crowd? And this, I think, is a great way to do it. Now, Ray is also a broker. He's also his own broker owner, so he can do whatever the heck he wants to do as long as it's legal and yada, yada, yada. But what if you don't want to go be a broker? Well, you know, there are brokers out there who will, quote, unquote, let you do business the way you want to do it. If you're, you know, the 100% shop, so to speak, you know, how RE/MAX used to be, I don't know if they still are. You know, if your broker's not getting a split, they're probably going to be a lot more likely to just say, yeah, do whatever you want. I was in Washington, D.C. last week, and I was talking with a broker owner of a RE/MAX franchise out there. And I just mentioned consulting kind of he didn't know I was involved in it. And he goes, oh, yeah, we have a lot of agents that do that. As if it was just no big deal that, yeah, we have agents who, do, you know, charge retainer fees and, you know, work by the hour. And he goes, yeah, that's fine with us. We don't care. And I thought, okay, there are people out there who, and he said, you know, a lot of our client base are attorneys and other professionals who understand the concept of working by the hour, of working under retainer fees, that sort of. So there may be an acre broker in your area. We have those out there who, if you came and said, hey, I want to do real estate consulting, they'd be like, rock on, let's get to it. So there are brokers out there who will allow you to run your business your own way, which could include charging alternatively. Now, if there are big franchises who won't hear of it, and if that's the case and you are committed to doing this, which if I went back into real estate today, I would be committed to doing this, and I would find myself someone who would either, one, just let me do what I want to do, or already embraced the consulting concept and was on board with it. Anything to add to this, Molly, before we move on?
Yeah, I wanted to comment that unlike Ray and Erica, I never, although I did get my broker's license, I was never a practicing broker. I always worked under another broker. And so I was always in the position, and I left my first firm, which was a traditional, to go to RE/MAX. And RE/MAX let me have a little bit of leeway, but I eventually went to Keller Williams. And I can't underline enough what both Erica and Ray said, that you've got to have a plan. You can't
mm-hmm.
come up with a half-baked idea. And I did. And it was a lot of paper, pencil. Of course, I did not have Acre to rely on for help. I had to do it by myself and kind of create it from scratch. But I did have a plan, and I did stress, and what went me over the hump, both at RE/MAX, but particularly at Keller Williams, was be able to present it. Back then, it was a really brand new idea, but say that, you know, this is not a replacement of a traditional commission. This is in addition to, and you're a consumer, and you're going to two different people to possibly sell your house, and you have one person who says, well, I only do it one way. I do, you know, plan A, and I have another one who says, I can do plan A also, but I can also do plan B. Who are they going to choose? And it's just a matter of going to the broker and saying, look, there's a whole hidden market out there. People are doing this on their own, or they're doing it with attorneys, or they're doing it and they're screwing it up sometimes. And we're losing thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars by not providing options to those who want it. Those who don't want it, I can do that. But those who do want it, why in the world do we not have somebody who can do it?
Excellent.
Jennifer?
Yeah.
I think the whole key is, Ray said it, it's missed revenue opportunity. It'll go to somewhere else if you do not find a way to capture it, and it's
or it won't
it's
go.
Not that, yes.
As Molly said, it'll just go unfilled.
It'll go unfilled, or it'll go to an attorney, or it'll go to someone who takes that and it is a supplementing source of income. That's the way I look at it. It's not a black and white A or B. It's something on the side that we can offer if you're not interested in the traditional method.
Now, part of the new ACRE course, and yes, we do have a course that teaches you how to do this, and that's not why we're here today. It's not an infomercial for that. But in the ACRE course, part of the course is coming up, well, a big part of the course is coming up with that plan that we referenced. And so that at the end of the course, which is roughly 3 weeks, if you follow it the way it's supposed to be done, then you will have a plan and that you can go and present to a broker that outlines pretty much everything they would need to know. So there's my one little plug for the ACRE program, because it goes a long way towards solving this concern. Okay, let's move on. The next objection, and this one always puzzles me. I don't understand the objection, but I get it all the time, so I know it's valid, is, oh, that'll never work in my market. What do you mean? What do you mean it'll never work in my market? And what I hear are a couple of things, one of which, if we have time, we'll delve into more. But one is that, prices are too low here, that's another objection I get specifically. Prices are too low here. Nobody is going to be willing to, pay anything up front because they can't afford to. Or that's just not how it's done. In my market, people expect the traditional model, and that's all they're going to be comfortable with. Ray, any thoughts?
You're not going to know until you try it. I think just go and offer the service. Learn the service and offer it, because you'll be surprised. The reason no one's using consulting is maybe because they don't even know it exists. They don't know it exists. It's not out there as an alternative. It's not out there as a choice. It's not out there as something they can pick from. Because nobody else is doing it. And now my market here was just like that. No one here was offering consulting services. So if I go by that, I never would have done it because nobody else is doing it. So I didn't. I went ahead and said, you know what? We're going to try it. And it worked. So don't think just because your market hasn't done it that it may not be open to it. A lot of it is education. Educate your market. Blog about it. Explain it to people you come across. Explain it really well to your agents, because they got to understand how to sell it. And as far as prices, home prices, being too low or whatever, in this market, I've not encountered that. I mean, our range of prices is from very low to very high. When you're providing this service, this open service, a lot of times what you're looking at is the service you're providing versus the dollar amount. It almost has nothing to do with the price of the house, but whether you're buying or selling. Mm-hmm. It's basically, here's what I'm going to do for you. Here's what my hourly rate is. Let's move forward if you want to do it. So the price of the house hardly ever comes into play when we're offering and have agreed to do consulting services.
That's such an excellent point. Thank you guys. You're bringing out things I hadn't really put into words. But when you're offering consulting services, and it's not, you're right, it's not based on the price of the home. It's right, based on the value of the service, go ahead, Erica.
Yeah, I'm in a market where we may sell houses between $10,000 and $300,000. So we're all over the board. Our average sale is $100,000, but I offer the same services to anybody regardless of the home price. And I base my consulting fee based on the amount of work that I think it will take to get the buyer or seller to closing, and that's it. It's not based on the fact that it's a $200,000 house or a $20,000 house.
Well, and I assume that, let's say Molly, who lives in the Boston area, let's say she has an hourly rate of, let's just for fun say Molly thinks she's $1,000 an hour. And because that's Boston, it's a very high price area. And but Erica or Ray, who are in not quite as high priced areas, maybe their $1,000 an hour looks more like $100 an hour. Or, you know, you can put your own numbers in there. But I think what messes with a lot of people is they get in their head that they need to be charging $200 an hour, $300 an hour, $500 an hour, whatever, because they see those numbers thrown out there and like, wow, that'll never fly in my market. Now, whether it will or whether it won't, I don't know. But, you know, yeah, in rural Oklahoma, $500 an hour or even $100 an hour, I don't know, may not work, you know, but you shouldn't need that. If you're living in an area that has a lower cost of living, you know, don't look at somebody in Washington, D.C. and what they're charging and say, well, I couldn't charge that. Well, no, probably not. You probably can't. So, Molly?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment not on the price points as much as the general concept of it would never work in my area. Again, remember that, you know, having founded Acre, when I started doing consulting back in the mid to late 90s, yeah, it wouldn't work in my area. Nobody was doing it. Nobody ever heard of it. And I just stayed, you know, in the time of Christopher Columbus, everybody believed the world was flat. And it took some very daring people to get on that boat and, you know, and find out that the world was really round. There are undiscovered markets that we don't know about. And if you were to be a consumer and go to somebody and say, gee, let me send you an email and let you know what I think about your proposal, and they said, oh, I don't use email, they wouldn't get the job today. We have to think beyond what is now and what will be, you know, and you would never compete today without having an active email account.
Mm-hmm.
Going forward, people are looking for choices, whether they let them know or they go. What I believe has happened is that consumers are cutting out the entire real estate industry because they're unhappy with mm-hmm. the narrow band of what they're being offered right now. And it's just something to keep in mind.
Well, you know, I'm getting ready to do a couple of personal real estate transactions within the next year, year and a half. And now that I'm familiar with or I'm comfortable with the idea of choices and options, every real estate deal I personally want to do, I would rather do it alternatively. Now that I know it exists, I'm like, well, I don't really want to pay a listing agent to do this. I'd like them to do A, B, and C for me, but not D, E, and F. And I'd like to, you know, and now that my mind's working that way, I don't think I'd be happy in a straight-up traditional real estate transaction. So it's
but
like
I
my
too,
paradigm
and I,
has shifted.
Yeah, and I just wanted to tag on to that, Jennifer, that and when I say people are cutting out the entire real estate industry, they just don't believe the industry. They look at the industry as a sales industry and that charges commission. And so they're cutting out the entire industry because they don't perceive that we can offer them what they are looking for. And I think it's just important to try to say, because it's such a horrible disservice to the consumer that they're doing without a real estate professional.
Alrighty, let's move on, and this is probably next to my broker will never go for it, probably the next biggest one, so I should have put it second, but oh well. Why would someone pay me to do what everyone else does for free? Why indeed? I have some opinions about this, but let's go to Erica. What do you think about that?
It doesn't even factor into my practice at all. I offer a service, I tell people what my fee is, and if they don't like it, they can certainly call someone else. Our office is really busy. I have a great reputation, and I have the ability to say to people, if you don't want to pay my fee, it's okay. Just go somewhere else. I do not worry about it. I state it in a positive manner rather than offering an apology. I'm sorry I have to charge you this. I say, my fee to represent you is X. That's the only fee you'll pay me at closing. For example, I charge my buyers. I charge my buyers to represent them. It's not a broker's fee, not a broker's service fee. It's my representation of the buyer. And I state it up front when I get the buyer's agency signed, and I state it as if there's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, someone will say, I've never paid an agent to represent me before, and I'll look at them and say, well, you've never worked with me before. This is for my representation of you, and if you don't want to pay it, it's okay, but I'll give you the names of some other agents who may be able to help you. And usually they just look at me and then sign. You say it in as if it's a fact rather than a question.
Exactly.
And this is how I do my business. You're certainly free to go to anybody else if you don't like this way.
Well, tell your HUD story. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
The one on Saturday afternoon or something?
Yep, a couple years ago, a guy called me Saturday at 4 o'clock as I was returning home. I'd worked all day, and he called me and said he wanted to put a bid in on a HUD home. And I said, fine, no problem, I'll meet you at the house. My fee to put the bid in is $300 when we write the bid, or if you don't want to pay up front, you could pay me at closing of $500. And he said, no, I just want you to meet me at the house, write the offer, put it in. I'm not paying you to do this. And I said, well, then you can call another office. He said, I've called every other office in the book. I've run down the line. I'm obviously an R, so he started at A.
Mm-hmm.
He said, nobody will come out and show me the house or put the bid in tonight. And I said, well, just replied to him. I said, that's fine. I said, I'm willing to come out, but my fee is $300 to come out. I said, you can pick the phone book up and keep going, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just totally floored. But that's my fee, and it's my service to get in the car and go turn around and go
and
back.
And you know a lot about HUD homes.
Right. And we're one of the only brokers in the area that is on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And we know how to handle them quickly and efficiently and get the property. So about 30 minutes later, he called me again. He said, nobody will do this tonight. I'll pay your fee.
And probably happily once he realized, you know.
Right, once he saw the paperwork that I was with him for 2 hours. It's not a simple thing, and the public doesn't know what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than just tell him to go goodbye and I'm not willing to do it now, he realized the value of it after he sat there till 8 mm-hmm. o'clock at night putting in the HUD bit.
Okay, Ray, what do you think about this?
Yeah, several things. One, I think that there are certain things that no matter how hard you try, you're not going to be able to do for free. So the comparison of, well, somebody else can do it for free. Yeah, maybe they can do a few things for free, like creating a property analysis or something like that. But when we've had that objection maybe once or twice in the last 2 years. So it's rare that it happens. But the way we counter it is, it's value. We're providing a value that goes beyond just printing out a property analysis. We're going to sit with you. We're going to talk about it. We're going to discuss it. We're going to give you guidance. We're going to consult you as to what's the best course of action for your particular need. We're just not going to send the report and email it to you and say, hey, take a look at that. You know, that old adage, you get what you pay for, is very true in any market, and particularly in real estate. When it comes to consulting services, we have to go beyond the typical traditional agent by providing as much value as we can, more value, and also not be timid about what we do. We sometimes tend to underprice ourselves or undervalue what we can offer a client. Granted, we're not doctors who've studied for 8 years, but some of us have a lot of experience, which is valuable. I've been in real estate for close to 20 years. So that didn't come easy. I've been doing it for a long time. So what I bring to the table is valuable, not only valuable to me, but valuable to whom I give it to and provide it for. So I expect to be paid, and I'm not timid about asking, you know, here's what it costs to do business with me. But there's an upside to that. You're going to get a lot for your value. You have to be careful if you're a fairly new agent that you are well-versed in your market and in whatever particular niche you're in, and be very good and provide a lot of value. Once you do that, I think that, well, somebody else can do it for free kind of goes away, because you become the expert. You become the go-to person in your market.
Well, and let me add to something neither of you mentioned, which I'm impressed with, actually. What Ray and what Erica both described are, they're not giving away what everyone else does for free. They are providing a higher level of service, a higher value of service. You know, the CMA example, if your CMA is the same CMA every other agent can do because they go into their system, they press, you know, print, and it spits out the exact same, can you charge for that? I don't think so. No. if your CMA is, as Ray described, much more consultative, much more, you put a lot more work into it, you know your market, you know what those numbers on there mean, then yes, there's a value to that, and maybe you know you're able to charge for that and feel comfortable charging for that. But the other aspect of how can I charge somebody for something that they get everywhere else for free? Okay, we've covered, okay, it's not what they're getting for free everywhere else because we're better, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. Broker Bryant Tudis charges his short sale clients. He charges all of his buyers a fee, and they can't wait to pay it because what he offers is special. The other side of this, and I'd like, you know, Ray and Erica's opinion on this, is you can charge part of the real estate fee, the traditional commission, contingent commission, includes a pretty significant element or paycheck for risk. Okay? Because when you're working contingently, you are taking on the risk that you won't get paid. Now, if you charge some sort of non-contingent fee, whether that's an upfront fee, maybe that's an hourly fee, a project fee, whatever, you have eliminated a chunk of risk to yourself, and therefore, it only makes sense to reward the client for eliminating that risk. So if, you know, what I did, and you probably have all heard this before, is with my sellers, I offered them two options. They could pay me my full contingent commission fee, or they could pay me an upfront fee and I would reduce my commission at the end because they had reduced my risk and I was rewarding them for that. So if you can come up with some options that help you reduce your risk, your personal risk, in exchange for something upfront from the buyer or the seller or the client, then it makes sense for them to do it. You're rewarding them for this, so it's a win-win for both. So, you know, can you go out, if you're just an average Joe real estate agent, no better, no worse than your average real estate agent, say, well, I'm going to charge for all these services, even though nobody else does. Can you sell that? I don't know. But if you make it a win-win for the consumer, then yes, you absolutely can charge for what other people are doing for, quote-unquote, free, as long as the client feels rewarded for relieving some of your risk. Erica, do you do any of that? I mean, does that factor into your?
Yeah, it does. We actually have an agent in my office who came up with something not too long ago that I was just tickled to death with. We've been seeing a lot of lowball offers, people coming in here and making offers of 50% of list price because they still think it's a buyer's market. Mm-hmm. And I had one agent who was extremely frustrated at offer after offer that she's writing, that people are not listening to her advice, that she writes the stupid offer, let's say. She tells them it's too low. They don't listen. She puts it in. They don't get the house. So she turned it around on me, and she said, I'm going to start charging my buyers $250 to write the offer and submit it, or they can close they can pay my fee at closing. So $250 up front to write or $300 at closing. I said, go for it. Do it. Mm-hmm. Within 2 weeks, she brought in two offers, $250 that she handed me for her offers. But not only was she getting the money up front, she was getting smarter offers because all of a sudden the people realized that they better listen to her advice to see if they could try and win this house, get the house, rather than waste time at the table screwing around with stupid offers. They had some skin in the game. And she created this and made it up on her own, and I supported her. And it's just amazing because suddenly the buyers are paying attention to her and her advice rather than just throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. So it benefited everybody. Of the two offers that she wrote in the 2 weeks, both got the house. So it benefits everyone.
We use it all the time. I mean, it's part of our – when we present the traditional commission contingent fee option and the consulting fee option, we explain it in that sense, risk versus reward. In one, I'm taking the bigger risk because I'm doing all these things up front, and the house may not sell for one reason or another. So I've invested time and money. So if I'm going to do that, and there's a possibility that the house may not sell, then obviously I want the bigger reward at the end of the process. However, if you don't want me to get the bigger reward, then you'll have to take up some of the risk. And this is what's involved in taking the risk here, these services, and you pay those up front. And I'm able to then reduce that commission and you benefit. So it's risk. It is definitely risk versus reward. That's the best way that we found to explain the difference between the traditional and consulting services.
Well, and when you give people choices, this is what I found when I just had my one simple little choice, was when you give people choices, they stop focusing on whether they can negotiate with you, and they say, I've got two choices here. Which one makes more sense for me? I had great luck with that. It wasn't a gimmick. It was the truth. And they better understood, which we could have a whole show on the risk versus reward. We're not going to because we need to move along. All right, let's go ahead and move to the next one. And this is, why would I want to make less money? The concept of this, I guess, is that you're saying, well, gee, if my average commission is, let's just say, $5,000, why would I want to make less money by charging, you know, let's say $500 to do X, Y, or Z? So if I do this consulting thing, I'm going to make less money. Why would I want to do that? Ray?
Boy, I've never seen it as making less money. I've always seen it as here's an opportunity to make some more, because there's always that possibility that with that particular client, that's what got me that client was the consulting services. So I don't see it as we're making less money. I know what my time is worth, and I know the value I've put on it. So I'm being paid fairly. I never see it. That's key. You've got to value your time properly so that you don't feel as though you're making less money. If you're obviously doing less work, you're going to make less money. But overall, you're getting rewarded and paid for your expertise.
Yeah, I think what the concern, and this came up in our last show and it was asked very intelligently, and I was almost incoherent, as I said, and did not answer it very well, but was that, you know, there's so many hours in the day, shouldn't I be working for the highest possible paycheck, which is going to be a contingent commission, instead of, quote-unquote, racing around after the $100 and $200 paychecks? You know, if I'm only going to work 10 hours a day, shouldn't I be striving for the big bucks? And I thought that was a very interesting way of putting it. You know, so how much time, you know, how do I divide my time between commission-related services and, you know, via the alternatives. Erica?
I guess I don't see it as dividing my time. It's not an option as more money or less money. It's just something I do. I don't divide it out in my brain that way.
I was thinking about this the other day, and that, you know, when I sold real estate, I did mostly, 90% traditional stuff. And, you know, so I made good money, right? Like, you know, you can in this business. And my big money, my good money, came in one big paycheck at a time, you know, maybe one a month, two a month, and good months, 14 a month, okay? And, yeah, I mean, I got nice paychecks. Let's, you know, say, and this is just illustrative, but let's say that a successful real estate agent makes $200,000 a year, okay? And they get that in chunks, big chunks. Well, I was thinking about this yesterday as I was going through this, and I thought, okay, I don't sell real estate anymore. I sell training materials. I sell books. I sell consulting, you know, real estate, you know, not this kind of consulting, but coaching, I guess. And so I don't get $10,000 paychecks at a time. I get maybe $20 at a time, maybe $50 at a time, maybe, you know, $300 at a time, which, you know, is not the same as getting a $10,000 paycheck. But, you know, my income from what I do now is, you know, comparable to what my income was when I was doing real estate. It just comes in a different manner and a different frequency and a less investment of my time. Okay, somebody's asking what kind of retainer fees are we talking about? And I'm assuming that question is more along the lines of how much as opposed to, quote-unquote, what kind, but I think we can address both of those, is, you know, how much, we can't answer that question. We've thrown out some numbers here that you may or, you know, may not be comfortable with, and they may not be exactly what you're asking. I saw a commercial agent's business plan the other day that his retainer fees are in the several thousands of dollars, but that's a market that can support that. So it's in the ACRE course, part of it is figuring out what you're going to charge and how you're going to charge it. And some of the way you do that is, what would I pay for this? What would I be willing to pay for a retainer fee, for a comprehensive market analysis, for an analysis of rent versus sell, you know, whatever? What would I feel comfortable in my market paying for this service? And, you know, it's some of it may be trial and error. And you may, the first time you come up with a fee structure, say, okay, I'm going to lowball this a little bit just so that I'm real comfortable with it. And then as I get more confident, I can raise my fees. You can do that anytime you want. You know, now, as far as what exactly is a retainer fee, I don't know if that's even the right word. Ray or Erica, do you have what you would call a retainer fee?
No, we don't have a retainer fee. We, again, charge by the task. We've taken our entire real estate process, whether with buyers or sellers, and divided it into tasks, and each task has a value of time and money. So to me, a retainer fee is more like, well, I'm going to charge you X amount of dollars, and I'm going to be on retainer. I'm going to be available, or I'm going to do certain things whenever they need to be done. We don't do that. So retainer fees, is that anything we do at all?
I don't do it that way either. I do it exactly the way Ray does.
Well, and you might call it, I called it an upfront marketing fee when I did it. And I know in some jurisdictions you can't, that's illegal. You can't call anything a marketing fee. But in Colorado, I could call it an upfront marketing fee, and that's what I called it. You know, don't get too caught up in the semantics, and that may not be what the question was. They may have just been asking, well, how much? Depending on your own business model and what people get for that fee, what kind of reward they get. Let's say they pay something upfront and you reward them with a big discount at the end, or, you know, depending on the size of the upfront fee. But it's just part of your business modeling. What we're not going to talk much about today is, okay, well, what are the different kinds of service packages you can put together? Give us some ideas. That's not our topic of our show today. It may be a good one for the future. So if I'm not addressing those questions, that is why.
If I could just go back quickly, because I think it was really important what I wanted to add.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was the last question, but, you know, why would I want to make less?
Mm-hmm.
I can't stress this enough, and that my experience in the ACRE program, this does not happen. You know,
mm-hmm.
And again, it's mostly because when people have that objection, it's because they have not taken into account all of their unpaid hours. So that if you look at what you make, but you divide it by the number of hours you actually work on
mm-hmm.
all of the buyers that didn't buy and the homes that didn't sell, you find that your hourly wage is so much lower than you ever, ever, ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare that to what you might come up with as your hourly rate, you will be shocked, and it will, even if you never do a day of consulting, it's an important exercise just to say, oh, my gosh, I am working for slave wages here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, it just, when I hear, oh, why would I want to make less, they have no idea how much of their unpaid hours they're accumulating.
All right, let's move on. We have three more. We may or may not get to them, but this one ought to be pretty quick. Charging upfront fees is illegal in my state or province. Now, this is an issue that there are a handful of states, and I believe, what's the province where Quebec is? Anyway, I know that there's some serious issues up there as far as doing anything non-traditionally, at least from what I've heard. But anyway, there are a handful of states in the U.S. that do put restrictions on the sorts of services, alternative services you can offer and how you're paid for them. Texas is one, California is one, Missouri and Kansas apparently have some, Alabama does. Anyway, and we have a list that you can actually reference and see if your state is one that restricts your ability to offer alternatives. Now, to say a blanket statement of it's illegal in my state, I believe is false. Now, are there restrictions? Yes, there are restrictions in some states. And what I've heard also is that some brokers will say, well, that's illegal here. And the agent says, okay, it's illegal here. But the brokers, it's not true. It may not work in the broker's office, but it's not illegal in the state. Now, if you're in a state that doesn't really restrict your ability to do it, then this is a non-issue for you. If you are in a state that restricts it, then it's an issue, and you'll need to do some investigating. I think we have ACRES, practicing ACRES, in nearly every state in the union. So, you know, perhaps someone else has done some research and can give you a little bit more guidance there. Now, let me ask then Erica and Ray and Molly, did you do any research into whether or not there are restrictions on you in your state?
Erica? Well, I did, but I did for the country as a whole, because I didn't have a lot of restrictions in my state, but I just wanted
mm-hmm.
to say that, for instance, if there's a limitation on taking a retainer fee, then you simply offer a service where you charge after the services are rendered, and therefore
mm-hmm.
it is not a retainer. You are not charging up front. You are charging as services given. So
good
in
point.
A typical listing, it would be once you've prepared the home for sale, then you charge the client for those services, and because these are services that are already rendered.
Pennsylvania doesn't have – there are certain things we are not allowed to do, but we're not doing them. So.
Okay. Ray, nothing in your
state? No, none. No, I didn't do any research because, again, like All our services are, you know, we charge after rendering our services. We're not doing anything up front.
Okay, that's a good point. That's what a lot of the states restrict is, and not, I mean, the ones that do, is the ability to charge up front as opposed to after services are rendered. Mm-hmm. So instead of collecting $500 on the day they sign the agreement, you get an agreement signed that they will pay the, let's say, $500 at a certain point in the transaction, and that should probably cover it. Buyer rebates, which we're not going to talk about today, but buyer rebates are, I believe, illegal in, I believe, 10 states. You just can't do it. Just can't do it. They are legal in the other states. Most states, I'm guessing, have, for, you know, the for sale by owner assistance, the MLS only, the, you know, the what we like to call discount or minimum service brokers. And to my way of thinking, if there are minimum service, discount, or whatever you want to call them in your area, they are practicing alternative services. And so to me, if they're practicing in your area and you're pretty sure they're practicing legally, then to me that says they can do it. So, Molly, did you have anything to add to that?
No, just that, and again, when this comes up particularly with brokers, is to be able just to expand the conversation to say, let's talk about what I'm talking about. And just be very pragmatic. I don't have any restrictions in Massachusetts, but, you know, in working with the Acres across the U.S. and Canada, mm-hmm. we did run into things. You just need to be work around those things, but that does not allow I think the mindset is, oh, we can't do it, and then just mm-hmm. write it off. No, mm-hmm. As our Acres are showing, yes, you can. You mm-hmm. may have to, you know, play around with it a little bit. But you, yes, you can.
Okay. Now, I think we've already talked about this next one, so unless anybody has anything to add, I'm going to go ahead and skip over it. But prices are too low in my market to make charging fees viable. As we discussed earlier, the fees you charge are going to be market rate for your market. So if somebody in Washington, D.C. can charge $500 to show up, you know, and you live in something rural, maybe, you know, you can only charge $50, but that $50 is every bit as meaningful to you as the consultant as the $500 is to the agent in D.C. So if it's a good deal for the consumer and it makes sense in your market, price point or economy isn't going to factor into this at all. And it does sound actually as if both Ray and Erica are in markets that are not expensive, not cosmopolitan, that they are working in the lower range of the market and it's working fine for them, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, keep in mind, not just what's good for your market, I mean, what's comparable in your market, but factor in your level of expertise, factor mm-hmm. in your experience. If you've got more experience, more value that you can provide, then charge more. Mm-hmm. Don't undersell yourself just because – don't ever compete on price. That's my motto. You mm-hmm. don't compete on price. You compete on value. And if you can offer more value, then you should charge more than somebody else who is less experienced and is offering less value.
Well, you know, the go-giver philosophy, I can't remember which stratospheric law of success it is, but if you provide more in value than you take in payment, that's the goal. Mm-hmm. If you're providing, well, more in value than you take in payment, like let's say that you are a real estate broker who is an expert in working with investment buyers and you charge $1,000, let's just say, for your service, but your investor reaps a $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, you know, reward because mm-hmm. of your $1,000 expertise, that's providing more in value than you take in payment, and that should be your goal, is that if somebody pays you money, they're getting value for it above and beyond what they pay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's also about your level of confidence in yourself and your mm-hmm. services. As you said, a new agent is not going to be able to march themselves in and say, I'm worth this or I'm worth that. And you just set your price accordingly to what you're comfortable with and mm-hmm. what the market will bear. And the more experienced you become, the more the go-to person you are in your area, the more valuable you'll be seen.
Cool. All right, and the last one, and I'm glad we got to this one, is I like working on commission. I don't want to work by the hour. I left corporate America. I don't want to work by the hour. That's silly. I like working on commission. Erica.
I like working on commission. I like getting the big commission at the end of the sale. But this is just an alternative. It's not X or Y. It is using both and blending them into your practice to see what benefits the consumer best. I don't consider it an A or B.
Exactly. But so you can work on commission to your heart's, you know, your heart's desire.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, we all got into this business because we like, you know, we like that part of it. And I'm no different from anyone else. I get a big charge out of that, Ray.
I have nothing else to add. I mean, that's correct. It's not one or the other. It's both. The more choices you provide, the better. You're gonna get more business. So don't think that just because we all like working on commission, like you said, but you've got the opportunity for some additional revenue that you otherwise may not have gotten.
Well, and what we found with some of our acres who have incorporated the choice concept is that they still do the vast majority of their work by commission, but because they're able to offer the consumer choices, the consumer doesn't balk at their commission. So when you go in and you say, here's one option, you pay me a contingent commission and it's this much percentage or money, or you can pay me this way and it's going to be a less, you know, a lower overall charge, but yada, 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 you're giving them a choice.
Mm-hmm.
They may pick the commission 90% of the time, but you gave them a choice. Now they understand why commissions are as high as they are. And they say, do I really want to take on that risk? I presented this to my husband a while back trying to explain it to him, and I was explaining how real estate commissions work, and he was telling me about a transaction he did when he was married before, and that the real estate agent got $7,000, and he was just really upset about that because she didn't do very much work, and he just didn't understand how she could have possibly made $7,000. And I said, okay, well, what if she had come to you up front and said, you can pay me this contingent commission, it'll be around $7,000, or you can pay me $2,500 up front, and that's it. Which would you have picked? And he sat on that, and he said, I don't know. I don't know what I would have done, but, yeah, now I get it that, you know, I was paying for the risk. So when you present it that way, again, you're offering a choice, and people like choices. But, yeah, there's nothing in the consulting model that says you can't work by commission. In fact, you may have an easier time presenting your commission if you're also offering choices. Molly, I bet you have something to add to that.
I mean, just the fact, and I just wanted to add this too, that a lot of times in my practice, somebody would, you know, and I always made that very easy for them too. They could try the fee option, but if any time they were worried about it, they could switch over to commission. It gave them the safety net of saying, you know, okay, or as I always put it, whatever you pay me in fees, if you switch over to commission, whatever you've paid will be credited to you at closing, so that they felt that they weren't taking a risk by trying a non-contingent way of doing it. And, you know, and it opened up so much opportunities for me. People who wanted to pay, didn't want to pay those big prices that those other agents are getting, but were a little bit worried about the risk factor. And having that option of knowing that they aren't throwing their money away, unlike the, you know, for sale by owner, you know, entry-only situations where you give them $500 and if it doesn't sell, they've lost the $500. These FSBO companies, they don't give you your money back.
Mm-hmm.
I give them a credit. Mm-hmm. And so it really does give me the opportunity. And I was just going to lastly comment, I loved working on commission, too, when – I got the commission, but I can't, you know, we all love the commission check when the house actually closes, but how many times does it not?
Well, and that leads into my big soapbox about agents who squeal and whine about how they're tired of working for free, and I say, you are not working for free, you are working on contingency, and, you know, you can't have it both ways. If you want the big, fat, juicy paychecks, either people are going to be willing to pay that because you're so good at what you do and you're better than anybody else, which is possible, certainly. You know, risk equals reward. Like Molly said, I love the way you put that. I loved getting commissions when I got them. But it is easy to fall into the idea of, I do so much work for free. I do so much work for free. And you do say, I think real estate, you know, I see these blogs on Active Rain that, you know, well, we should be paid up front. We should, you know, we shouldn't be working for free anymore.
But then you don't get the big bucks. You
right,
know, in other words,
right.
Look at any other profession that gets paid a fee. They don't get a big windfall if they're working on a fee basis. If they are getting paid, they're getting paid very well for what they do, but they're also expecting a big windfall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one or the other. If you love the thrill of the chase, and a lot of us in this business do, oh, God love you. Go for it. But then don't complain that about all of the deals that don't go together, because that's just part of the package.
It's part of why you're being paid the big windfall. If you're interested in the ACRE program, you can go to our website, which is lovely. I love our website. You can get, there's a free course at SWS University called Is Real Estate Consulting Right for You? You can enroll in that, go through it, and I think you'll have some fun with it. It'll take you half an hour or so, if that. Thank you all. Thank you, Erica. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Molly. You guys did a great job. I really appreciate you joining me. I hope you enjoyed yourselves. Did you?
Had a great time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you.
Cool. Great.
All right. Well, Ray, it was really nice to meet you. This is the first time we've talked, so I appreciate you coming on. I think we should talk some more. And thank you for being here today, and we will see you next time.